And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin.
And we've got a great hour for you this week. We're obviously going to be catching up on the news and just the insane amount of data breaches that there were. But our deep dive is actually going to be on the Colonial Pipeline, because if you didn't know, the pipeline itself, that which flows the actual fuel across the eastern seaboard of the United States, wasn't actually hacked. That's right. It wasn't actually hacked. The pipe itself wasn't hacked. We're going to dive into that. I think it really speaks to some greater issues we have here with the U.S. government and regulation of critical infrastructure like this. But stick around. It's going to be a great hour. And as always, let's start with the news. And in AI news, and I'm going to pose this question to my audience here. Would you replace your lawmakers with artificial intelligence? I think this is absolutely fascinating. It's coming from CNBC, and here's what's going on. A study has found that most Europeans would like to see some of their members of parliament replaced by algorithms. Researchers at IE University's Center for the Governance of Change asked 2,769 people from 11 countries worldwide how they would feel about reducing the number of national parliamentarians in their country and giving those seats to an AI that would have access to their data. The results, which were published on Thursday, May 27th, showed that despite artificial intelligence's clear and obvious limitations, 51% of Europeans said they were in favor of that move. Now, Oscar Johnson, who is the academic director at the Center for Governance of Change and one of the report's main authors, basically told CNN that there's been a, quote, decades-long decline of belief in democracy as a form of government. The reasons are likely linked to increased political polarization, filter bubbles that we experience online through things like Google, and information splintering. Quote, everyone's perception is that the politics is getting worse, and obviously politicians are being blamed, so I think the report captures the general zeitgeist. He added that the results aren't surprising, quote, given how many people know their member of parliament, how many people have a relationship with a member of parliament, and how many people know what their member of parliament is doing. The study found the idea was particularly popular in Spain, where 66% of the people surveyed supported it. Elsewhere, 59% in Italy were in favor, and 56% of people in Estonia were in favor of that as well. And I've done, actually, here on this show, things on Estonia before. They spun up artificial intelligence judges to basically adjudicate basic non-criminal claims so their court systems would start moving out that backlog. And so they've actually been on the infrastructure and forefront of artificial intelligence. And Estonia is actually a place to watch. Now, not all countries like the idea of handing over their control to the machines. And I swear to God, I think I'm the only one that's ever seen Terminator here. Thank you, Skynet. So obviously not everybody likes this idea. And obviously these AIs could possibly be hacked or act in ways that humans don't want them to, i.e. what happens if the artificial intelligence decides to vote to kill all humans to maintain order and peace. So in the UK, for example, 69% of people surveyed were against the idea, 56% against it in the Netherlands, and 54% in Germany. Outside of Europe, and this is interesting, some 75% of people surveyed in China supported the idea of replacing parliamentarians with artificial intelligence. 60% of Americans, though, were against it. Now, opinions also vary dramatically by generation, as you would imagine. Younger people are obviously more open to this idea. 60% of Europeans aged 25 to 34 are for it. 56% of those from 34 to 44 supported it as well. The majority of respondents above 55 years of age don't think it's a good idea. And like I said, I think that this is interesting. My third TED Talk involved artificial intelligence, the flaws that are inherent to that. We can also be programming in bias into our artificial intelligence, and we oftentimes don't realize that we're doing that. In other words, a very well-meaning data scientist can program an artificial intelligence, not realizing that he or she has some kind of bias in there. There's a lot of studies that have been done on that. So we'll see where this goes, but I'd be curious to know if you think that you should replace your local member of Congress with artificial intelligence. And quite frankly, looking at some of the members of Congress, AI might do a better job. So with that, that is your artificial news of the week. And in Apple news, Apple is lying to you. And hear me out here, because Apple's marketing and legal teams seriously need to get on the same page. One of these two teams is correct, and the other one is lying. They can't both be right, and let's dive in. And this is coming from multiple sources, but I'm cribbing primarily from ThreatPost. Now, Apple is using the growing threat of malware on its Mac platform as a defense in a lawsuit that could force the company to open up new channels of applications for its mobile iOS platform. If you didn't know, iOS is the operating system that runs your iPhone and your iPad and also your Apple TV. In testimony in a California court a couple of weeks ago, Apple's head of software engineering, Craig Federighi, called the level of malware threat against the Mac platform, not the iPhone platform, the Mac platform, one that the company finds quote-unquote unacceptable and continues to defend against with restrictive application distribution platforms, according to a report published by CNET. Now, Federighi's comments were made as Apple executives begin testifying in a court case against Apple, Epic Games, who brought this lawsuit against Apple for what Epic views as restrictive policies on the iOS App Store. Now, Epic Games is the maker of Fortnite. You may have heard of that game. Your kids definitely have. Now, proceedings in the case began basically at the beginning of May in the United States District Court, Northern District of California, and top Apple executives were testifying to defend their side, basically as this was all coming to light. Throwing the security of its own platform basically under the bus is an about-face for Apple, which for years boasted about the security of Mac over rival Windows platform, and the company even began running popular comedic television advertising campaigns illustrating that point in 2006. You might remember that with basically Justin Long and another comedian, you know, I'm a Mac, I'm a PC, and all of that, and there were basically versions of that, and they made something like 30 or so of these commercials. There's one where John Hobson, the other comedian who is the PC, he's the nerdier one, basically gets sick and you know, and all of that. And Justin Long is like, well, I'm a Mac and I never get infected because if you use a Mac, you don't get viruses and all of that. This is something they have been talking about pervasively for years. And now they're basically disputing that in court. Now, basically, it was certainly true for years as well that PCs definitely suffered the bulk of malware woes while the Mac platform remained more secure, largely due to its proprietary nature, meaning PCs were a global operating system that anybody could use, manufacturers could make products for, whereas Mac was a very closed ecosystem, and therefore it was much smaller of a target, but it was still targeted. And while all of the software on the Apple was more or less vetted by Apple and could only be used on computers sold by Apple, the use of Windows on different hardware platforms and its general ubiquity as a PC platform obviously made it that open playing field. But now, the malware threat landscape has changed drastically, particularly with the explosion of the iPhone, the iPad, mobile devices in general, and iPad and Apple, excuse me, is now under attack, according to Federighi. Now, this is why security remains a primary focus for Apple and why it should be able to continue its strict management of its software availability via the App Store, including policies that are at the center of the Epic Games lawsuit, and that is according to his testimony. Now, attackers certainly have been finding ways to exploit both Mac and iOS platforms in unprecedented ways in recent years, with the company basically patching and fixing those vulnerabilities and making those security fixes as quickly as they can find them. Basically, in April, Apple released basically four unscheduled updates to iOS. Again, that's iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, macOS, that's your MacBook, and watchOS, that's your Apple Watch, to basically plug those security holes on the flaws in basically what is known as its WebKit browser engine. And a week before that, Apple then patched a zero-day vulnerability. A zero-day vulnerability is a very severe vulnerability in its Mac OS, you know, MacBook operating system, that essentially can bypass the anti-malware capabilities, in which a variant basically of a notorious Mac threat known as Slayer had already been exploiting for several months. Basically, they are getting infected. And so 2021 has been a less than stellar year so far for Apple security. The company kicked off the year by removing basically a contentious Mac OS feature that allowed some Apple apps to bypass content filters, VPNs, and third-party firewalls. They quickly followed that up with an emergency update to patch 3 zero-day vulnerabilities discovered in iOS. Again, that's your iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV. After a major software update in November of last year, already fixed 3 that were actively being exploited. Prior to that, 2020 also saw a flurry of Apple patches for zero-day flaws in iOS, including 2 that had apparently been abused for years before discovery. And so, by virtue of that, you have Apple in court testifying under oath that they have a very serious problem with malware and infections and all of that. But now you have their marketing coming out and saying, well, we are maintaining your privacy. You don't get infected when you're using an Apple product. We are basically exempt from that. And here we are. Which is it? We know, and I can tell you from my day job, as my radio show is not my full day job, that we can hijack and exploit Apple all the time. It happens constantly. For them to come out and say, oh, well, you don't need antivirus, which they pulled all third-party antivirus from their app store in 2015 anyway, because their quote-unquote sandboxing system is so good, it's not. These are the things that we're talking about here. And while it's true there are more infections for Android than there are for iPhone, this is a huge, huge problem that most Apple users have no idea about. Don't believe the hype. Your MacBook, your iPhone, your any Apple device can be infected and can be hit just like a PC, just like an Android, just like any other operating system. Don't believe the hype. Apple is lying to you on their marketing side, and their legal team just proved it. And that is your Apple News of the Week. And in cryptocurrency / IRS news, and you may possibly know where I'm going with this, especially if you invest in things like Bitcoin or Ethereum, the inevitable has finally happened. The IRS wants crypto wallet cracking tools, and here's what's going on, and this is coming from NextGov, basically a news source that tracks government agency requests. The IRS's criminal investigations divisions want quote-unquote reliable tools, basically, and processes for cracking crypto wallets. That's right, if you have a crypto wallet, they want to be able to break into it. Now, as a primer to this, cryptocurrencies, if you didn't know, are digital assets with set or fluctuating market rates that can be traded for real currency. The rise of cryptocurrencies coincided with the invention of a distributed ledger, which is also known as blockchain, which allows for transparency in accounting while maintaining the user's anonymity. For an added layer of security, some cryptocurrency traders use crypto wallets, which is what we're talking about here. These keep the private keys, those encryption keys needed to access the cryptocurrency, separate from the broker making the transaction, therefore upping the security. These wallets can take the form of a segmented application with an extra layer of security or a separate piece of hardware like a flash drive that stores the private keys offline until needed. For the IRS Criminal Division's Digital Forensics Unit, crypto wallets seized as part of investigations have been very tough to crack. Obviously, they're layered with usually very strong encryption, and so it's very difficult. And so, according to the request for information by the IRS posted to the SAM website, which is essentially where government agencies post requests for contractors to basically apply to do the work. And I quote the IRS's request for information, though a few known cyber penetration testers have published vulnerabilities on specific devices, the process of decrypting the hardware devices to gain access to the wallets has been challenging. The explicit outcome of this requirement is to tame the cybersecurity research into measured, repeatable, consistent digital forensic processes that can be trained and followed in a digital forensics laboratory. Now, the tools and processes should be usable for any crypto wallet on the market, including software and hardware. The request for information, or RFI, drives this point home by requiring the ability to analyze software and firmware, reverse engineer hardware, and I quote, deconstruction of printed circuit boards in integrated circuit packages. Specifically, this contract is looking to do multiple things. One, validate cybersecurity research in cryptographic wallet exploitation. 2, identify new methods to gain access to cryptographic wallets. 3, identify successful cryptographic models for exploits. 4, document the process, hardware, and skill sets needed for reproduction in an advanced digital forensic laboratory. And 5, create hands-on training for the identified techniques in support of IRS CI digital forensics laboratories. Now, this RFI seeks to garner industry feedback on the market. Small and disadvantaged business set-asides are there as well. And so heads up to you, the IRS is coming for your crypto wallet, so you better be honest with them. And that is your IRS/cryptocurrency news of the week. And in Israeli-Palestinian news, basically, there's a part of this conflict that few people are talking about. And honestly, I could do a deep dive of this, but we're going to do this in a news segment. And that is information warfare online. Now, I am not adjudicating either side of this. It doesn't matter to me, for my listeners, that is, if you're pro-Palestinian, anti-Palestinian, pro-Israel, anti-Israel. I am simply laying out the facts as reported by various news sources here, aggregated by CyberScoop and some others, because I think this is an important aspect of that fighting that has been going on between Hamas and Israel, Palestine and Israel, you know, however that's divvied up. But here's what happened about a week ago or so. Facebook stood up a 24-hour operations center to address the disinformation and misinformation over this particular conflict that is spreading on their platform. In recent days, misinformation and disinformation has tainted the discourse around this particular conflict. Literal lies about the conflict that have spread online include misinformation about Israel planning a ground invasion in the Gaza Strip when Israel was in fact not trying to do that. Israel actually spread that false narrative deliberately to trick Hamas, according to Israeli news outlets. Other misinformation has included video footage that purported to depict Palestinian militants launching rocket attacks at the Israelis. That video actually was from 2018 and was part of the actual Syria conflict, possibly the Libya conflict, but it was not actually from Israel and this specific conflict that we've all heard about in the news. Facebook, therefore, stood up this 24-hour operations center. They staffed it with both Hebrew and Arabic speakers so that content moderation decisions about misinformation related to the violence could be informed by the trends on the ground. And that is according to Monica Bickert, who is Facebook's vice president for content policy. Now, Facebook previously did not request terms for comment, basically to the New York Times, regarding their story about the misinformation spreading rapidly on their platform. And a spokesperson for WhatsApp, owned by Facebook, told the New York Times that the application had put a limit on how many times somebody could forward messages as a way to prevent the spread of misinformation. WhatsApp is their more secure messaging app that is used worldwide, also very heavily in that region of the world as well. Now, the news that Facebook has a misinformation operations center dedicated to the ongoing conflict comes as some U.S. lawmakers have called for a ceasefire. But the carnage shows no signs of letting up, and I believe it's still going on as we are talking about this right now. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said about a week ago or so that Israel is, quote, determined to continue this operation until its aims are met. President Biden told Prime Minister Netanyahu that he expected a significant de-escalation on a path to ceasefire. And so as of right now, Facebook does not have a set end date for when it will stand down the operations center as this violence continues. And obviously, you know, if you are listening to this, and I know I've got listeners all over the world, not just obviously on the radio, but also, you know, in podcast form or on SoundCloud, this is a huge, huge thing. I hope everybody, regardless of your political beliefs, are staying safe in that region. And obviously, as things unfold or develop, as it comes to the information and disinformation warfare online, I will absolutely keep you up to date here on the deep dive. So stick with me. But that is your Israeli/Palestinian news of the week. And in U.S. military news, the U.S. military is actually about to be monitored for extremism. This is really interesting, and it's coming from The Intercept. Now, as part of the Biden administration's crackdown on domestic extremism, the Pentagon plans to launch a pilot program for screening social media content for extremist material, according to internal Defense Department documents reviewed by The Intercept, as well as a source with direct knowledge of the program. An extremism steering committee led by Bishop Garrison, a senior advisor to the Secretary of Defense, is currently designing the social media screening pilot program, which will quote-unquote continuously monitor military personnel for quote-unquote concerning behaviors, according to the Pentagon's briefing in late March. Although in the past, the military has balked at surveillance or surveilling service members for extremist political views due to First Amendment protections, the pilot program will actually rely on a private surveillance firm in order to circumvent First Amendment restrictions on government monitoring, according to a senior Pentagon official. Though the firm has not yet been selected, the current frontrunner is Babel Street, a company that sells powerful surveillance tools, including social media monitoring software. Now, Babel Street has drawn criticism for its practice of bulk buying cellular location data and then selling it to federal national security agencies like the Secret Service, who rely on the private company to bypass warrant requirements normally imposed on bodies seeking to collect data. Those would be government bodies seeking to collect data. In November, Vice News reported that the U.S. Military Special Operations Command used one of Babel Street's products known as Locate X to track the location of individuals for special forces operations. One method Babel controversially used was to purchase location data associated with the users of a popular Muslim prayer app. Now, it is unclear to what extent Congress is aware of this program, if at all. When asked about the program, a spokesperson for Representative Don Bacon, who's a member of the House Armed Services Committee, said that they were not aware of it. And to quote Bacon's press secretary, Abby Schieffer, and I quote, "I have discussed this with our defense team, and as of right now, we have not heard anything from DOD that would confirm this story." The Senate Armed Services Committee did not immediately respond to requests for comment from various news sources. The Department of Defense hinted at the program on April 9th, in a press release about its Countering Extremism Working Group, which says it will make recommendations on, quote, incorporating machine learning and natural language processing into social media screening platforms, as well as ensure training addresses issues raised by commanders and supervisors on gray areas such as reading, following, and liking extremist material and content in social media forums and platforms. Now, the pilot program will use keywords to identify potential extremists, though coming up with a list of terms without running afoul of speech patterns and speech protections has proven to be challenging, according to that senior Pentagon official. To this end, the military plans to consult with experts from across the political spectrum to help develop the pilot program. As The Intercept previously reported, the military's Countering Extremism Working Group drafted a list of potential consultants that included anti-Muslim and Christian conservative groups. So I think this is actually going to be really interesting to see how this unfolds. It looks like the First Amendment protections that U.S. soldiers have alongside citizens is attempting to be circumvented by a company that is known for circumventing the warrant system for the Secret Service. And so privacy obviously is a huge, huge thing now. And I don't think anybody, I don't care what country you're in, wants extremists in the military, especially if they're rising through the ranks and starting to command troops. And so I'm wondering where the balance is here. How do you actually identify correctly these extremists and expel them from the military versus somebody that, you know, accidentally liked a Facebook post, not realizing, you know, the full extent of, let's say, the person that posted it. So I think this is going to be interesting. We're going to see where this goes. But if you're in the U.S. military, heads up, you're soon to be monitored for extremist content. And I think if that's the case, I think a lot of people that would be considered extremists will simply stop looking at major social media sites and start going to fringe ones, or simply just not saying a thing at all until they get out of the military. That seems to be in their best interest in that sense. So we'll see what happens here. But that is your U.S. military news of the day.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
And before we head over to the next segment, I wanted to let you know, and I've done this in a couple of shows, and I keep being reminded to do this, and I always forget. Basically, if you didn't know, I put out content on a daily basis, not just here on the radio where you're listening to me, but actually I put it quite a lot of places, daily podcasts and videos on some of the latest trends, technology, cybersecurity, privacy, all these kinds of things I keep day to day. And some of the segments that I do for my news section or even my breaches of the week every Sunday gets translated into this show. But I do this as essentially a labor of love. You know, I don't have any kind of monetization anywhere. I just do it to keep people informed and to keep everybody interested. But you can find me basically on Twitter or Facebook at @NickAESP or on LinkedIn and YouTube at @NickEspinoza. And please follow me. I'd love to basically get a shout out from you and you know, send me a message or whatever it is. But I do content daily, and I hope you guys enjoy it. And so that is my quick blurb.
And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at @NickAESP. Again, that's @NickAESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin.
And the past couple of weeks in data breaches have been absolutely off the rails, as it normally is. And that's just so unfortunate. But we have some really interesting segments here. And before I begin, as always, I'd like to thank the following people that sent me, messaged me, whatever it was to get me a lot of these data breaches. It is always appreciated. And that is David Walker, Jason Dance, Jacqueline Wolf, Richard Reefer, Chris Fallon, and Barrett Peterson. And as I mentioned in the preamble, if you have a breach, please feel free to send it my way and I will give you a shout out. Now with that, let's get started with the Visalia Unified School District in California. Now, basically, they were victims of a ransomware attack, saying it impacted the operation of their school district's IT systems, but we don't know much more at this point. And so, heads up, if you use Visalia Unified School District, or you're in that, rather, that's obviously a huge thing in California. Moving on, let's talk about student health insurance carrier Guard.me. They took their website offline after a vulnerability allowed a threat actor to access policyholders' personal information. And if you didn't know, Guard.me is one of the world's largest insurance carriers specializing in providing health insurance to students while traveling or studying abroad in another country. On May 12th, Guard.me discovered suspicious activity on their website that led them to take down their website. When visiting the website, visitors were automatically redirected to a maintenance page warning that the site was down while they increased their security. The exposed information includes students' dates of birth, genders, and encrypted passwords. For some students, their email addresses, mailing addresses, and phone numbers were also exposed. So if you have a student in your life or you use Guard.me, heads up to you.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.